Board. Hello, everyone. I'm Leslie Cornwell, certified nurse midwife, and I have Lily Mason here with me, a certified professional midwife in Kansas. Thank you, Lily, for joining today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to talk with you.
So tell me a little bit about your midwifery journey, Lily, because that's how I always start out our initial conversations.
Yeah, well, mine was fairly organic. I was the little girl that was always pretending pregnancy. Like all my doll games always involved some doll being pregnant. My little sister and I had a collection of like 30 Barbie dolls, and they were always, we were like made little outfits for them to be pregnant. And we would buy these little dolls that were called quints that came as five babies all together so that we could have enough babies for all of our Barbie dolls. And
I was just
always playing that as a kid. And I thought it was like my weird, you know, as I got older and realized that not everyone else was as interested in birth as I was, I thought it was just my weird quirk.
It's amazing, like that nurture versus nature. You are biologically DNA designed to be a midwife.
Yeah. And I also like didn't sleep. My mom remembers telling my preschool teachers, don't let me nap, because if she naps, she'll be up all night long. Like,
see,
this person doesn't need a lot of sleep.
Goodness, yeah.
Yeah. It was like destined. So, and then when I was 16, I like woke up out of sleep with the words in my head, you have to serve moms and babies.
Wow.
And I didn't know who that voice was or where that was from, but it seemed absolutely true. And so I was like, oh, okay.
You've got a midwife angel that's been watching you since day one, putting little
right
in your shoulder. You got.
I had no information about midwives. I was born by an emergency C-section. My parents weren't involved in the health world. I didn't know who did that. I was like, So, okay, I want to do that. That's me. But who does that? So I looked around and I learned that OBGYNs, doctors, help moms and babies. Right. And so I start from that point on, I like was aiming at medical school. And so I went to college and did pre-med and took the MCAT and was applying to medical schools and all of that. And I just randomly had some good friends that were having a home birth. And they said, you know what, you want to be a doctor and you're alternative minded. You should see this before you go to medical school. And so they invited me to be there and help take care of their older kids at their home birth. And it was just one of those experiences where your whole world just turns 180 degrees and you suddenly see things
in a different way. You just like, don't know what you don't know.
Nope. Yeah. And I was like, oh, that's what I'm supposed to do. I need to learn how to be a midwife. Mm-hmm. And so then at that point, I basically stopped the medical school application process and started apprenticing with a home birth midwife. And from there on, I apprenticed with her for about a year. And then I had my first child and took some time off. And then I kept, you know, during that whole time, I was, you know, getting certifications to be a doula and certifications for childbirth educator and placenta encapsulation specialist.
Anything you can to get more experience. Yep.
Did all of those things. And, you know, and as I had each kid, I took some time off, but then I eventually all told I apprenticed with six different local midwives. And then when I was I started doing the NARM process, the PEP process to become a CPM. Mm-hmm. I made that decision because in Kansas, where I work and live, CNMs, nurse midwives, have to have a supervising physician. And I had so many CNM friends that I watched over the years get their practice going, like finish school, get their practice going, work really hard to get that doctor backup. And then after a year of practice, they lose the doctor backup and they'd
it's
have to
so vulnerable. Yeah. The states where you have that collaboration requirement, like even for birth centers, I see it a lot because there's so many requirements with the medical director role being an obstetrician versus a midwife, that their doc retires and that birth center closes. So yeah, it makes our midwifery practices very fragile.
Yeah. And I just didn't, I mean, I'm a type A oldest sister in charge personality that
I think,
you know,
most
I was just
of
like,
us
I
are
am not going to be good
you wanna
at
fight
being...
the system. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. I can't be somebody's employee. I'm not good at that. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I didn't want to be in that, like the have to have a doctor supervisor, the defining whether or not I could practice, right?
Yeah.
So I chose to be a CPM, and in Kansas, CPMs can be independent practitioners. We're actually not regulated by the state at all, which is also a tenuous position. Mm-hmm. But at this point, it's, you know,
it's good and bad. It has its drawbacks and its perks.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So mm-hmm. eventually, when I got close to the end of my CPM training, in my apprenticeship training, I went to and worked at a birth center in Utah. I went a couple of different times and worked at Better Birth Birth Center and finished up my, the last parts of the CPM portfolio training, because there were certain things that, like, even in, you know, I had actually been apprenticing for 11 years all told, and I had worked with 6 different midwives.
Wow.
But in a home birth practice, I had probably done like 6 vaginal exams.
Yeah.
The whole time, because my midwives that I worked with just didn't do that, you know.
Yeah.
But it was a skill I knew I needed to have, and when I do it, I want to be absolutely sure that I can know what I'm doing.
You need the volume, and you need a place that's regularly a little more interventive. And I think birth centers tend to, because they're held to a different standard when you're a facility. So yeah, on admission checking versus the home birth midwives tend to be much more hands off than birth center. And there's nothing wrong; it's just different style. So.
And I knew I wanted to practice like that ultimately, but I didn't have the confidence in myself to practice until I knew I had could do it 100 times if I needed to, you know? So I went to the birth center and got that kind of experience, and that was wonderful. It was a great teaching experience. And then I came back from Utah and opened up my own practice in 2014. And I've been in home birth practice since then.
The question I had when you were talking, because I think you and I have a similar upbringing, when you shifted gears from pre-med to all of a sudden being a midwife, how did your family and support system handle that? Like, I
well,
like, why don't you just get a job as a nurse? You know, being a midwife too, like that labor and delivery nurse, I said, you have no idea how insulting you are. That's like telling a physician to go back to be a resident. It's okay. That's more safe, secure out there. So I was curious. That was what was going through my head. When you have a family that you grow up in, they don't see midwifery, they don't see the value, they're more the medical structure. What did they say to you?
Well, you know, my parents were flabbergasted. My dad was like, what? I mean, but they were, you know, they've always been supportive and loving and kind. I don't think they did not understand.
No.
Why I was doing that. And honestly, it probably cost me my first marriage. My first husband was initially supportive. But over time, the midwife life is really rough, and we got married young, and we didn't have all the skills we needed to deal with the long process of being in midwifery school, where I was working and not making money.
Yeah.
You know, that was hard and stressful on our relationship. And as we were getting divorced, my ex-husband was saying things like, you know, when we got married, I thought you were going to go to medical school, and I was going to be the at-home parent, and this whole thing just didn't go the way we planned it to. So,
yeah. And that's what's so hard. I mean, life changes. And do you guys morph it into, and I think we see that a lot in midwifery. I would love to see more studies of the divorce rates and the types of support system you have to have around yourself to be successful, to be a good work-life balance, to have someone that understands completely the midwifery realm. Like, I laughed, like, because you're talking about the type A personality. So when my husband and I got together at 19, I knew at 16 I was gonna be a midwife. So here we are, like, the first couple dates, and I'm like, okay, I'm gonna be a midwife, I'm gonna be on call 24/7, I'm looking for someone to be like, I had very clear OCD expectations really of my partner. And so, like, we worked out because he knew but like I said, you, like, when you shift gears and you go a totally different pathway after you're established together, I can't imagine how much harder that is versus knowing when you start out that relationship.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't want to throw him under the bus. He was pretty supportive of home birth. I mean, he said when we had our babies at home, right.
It versus the immediate family is directly running the practice. That's a very different role.
Yeah. Whereas my second husband, I was already a practicing midwife when we got together, and it was clear. I was like, this is our life. this is what it means.
You want to join the crazy boat and the fun train?
Bless his heart. He is so, he's so up for it and so supportive, and that, you know, I can't do anything that I do without him, without his support. So it is really, really crucial.
Yeah. Yes. So, and yeah, I think that's the hard part when you decide to be a midwife, a second career a little later in life, and you're already established and you had a big career shift, a big midlife crisis, whatever it is, it's a very different direction than you knew when you were young before you met this person and immersed them in that lifestyle of what it would look like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So another exciting thing I want to talk about, Lily, is your book. I love promoting when midwives are doing additional resources, they're doing little side hustles, they're doing something else besides catching babies, because I think there's so many layers of midwives think, well, I can't call myself a midwife if I'm a book writer. I can't call myself a midwife if I start a women's health clinic. Like, there's these stereotypes. If I'm not directly catching a baby, I'm embarrassed to promote myself as a midwife. So I would love for you to talk about why you created this book, what it's about.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity. And I am catching babies.
You're doing both. Yeah, but you're venturing so out to other avenues that help out families. Yeah.
It is kind of crazy. And honestly, I am. So I've been spending the last 2 years writing this book and working on the book around times when I'm catching babies. And it really, actually, I had to fool myself into writing it because the first, you know, I've told myself for years, I have all these things that I've written for my practice, of course, you know, all these, I call them new life formulas that I make up for my moms. And they're basically recipes for habits that really help pregnancy unfold in a normal, healthy way, right? Mm-hmm. And as you practice and work with women, you get these kind of recipes ingrained. And they've been building in my body for years and years and years. And I always told myself, well, I don't have time to write a book because I'm a midwife. I'm catching babies and helping moms. And, you know, I'm very hands-on doing all the support all the time. But I had a little bit of a window, a couple of months where I didn't have anybody do. And so I took a class on writing books because I thought, oh, I could make some of these into a short little ebook, right? Mm-hmm. And I could learn that skill and that would be really fun because I've always wanted to do it. And of course, I would never have started writing if I had thought that I would still, that it would take
2 years. If you'd have told yourself, I'm going to publish 2.5 years from the start. Yeah. The goals.
Yeah, no,
I would think you're going to do it in 3 months and just cram it out and it'll be out to the,
Right, exactly. But so that being said, the thing that really gave me the fire to write this book was that women, mothers, families, everybody needs access to this life-changing information. Yeah. And I'm only one person, one midwife. And even, you know, I can only reach so many people. And so writing a book makes it available to reach so many more people. And so I knew I wanted to write. And in the long term, I want to write lots and lots and lots of things. So I had to start with the question of what am I going to do first? And I went back to the the basics, Sound of Music. Let's start at the very beginning. It's a very good place to start. Yep. And I decided to start with the first trimester. So this first book is called Your First Trimester, A Midwife's Practical Guide to Self-Care. And it grew out of the experience that I've had hundreds of times in my office where moms come to see me and they say, I am really struggling with nausea. I don't know how people make it through these first 12 weeks. Yeah. Nobody told me it was going to be like this.
Yeah.
What can I do? Yeah. And luckily I've been so blessed to have this, you know, all the 6 midwives that I mentored with, the whole midwifery chain of wisdom that goes back, we don't even know how far, telling us, informing me that the simple things like refocusing back on what you eat and when you eat it,
the digestive tract, speeding it up,
and movement,
stress.
And relieving the stress and things like just the really simple, basic things really do help you move right. out of suffering and into a place where I can manage this, I can handle it. Mm-hmm. And so hundreds of times I've gone through this practice, like with these new life formulas. I have new life formulas created for nausea and headaches and constipation and miscarriage, you know, like all the big things that bother people in the first trimester. Mm-hmm. And I've heard over and over again, people in my office saying that was a game changer. This mm-hmm. is really helpful. I'm so glad I learned this now. I wish I'd known it with my first pregnancy.
Yeah. Right? If they had a doctor in the past or they didn't ask the right questions, I mean, our society is so medical treat. It's not get to the root cause. It's not prevention. They get Reglan, Zofran and be told you're fine and don't get constipated from this med. That's the education they're given.
Exactly. Yeah. And so I felt like if we're going to start a pregnancy with these midwives practical guides, the place to start was first trimester.
Yeah.
Yep. And all those little things that if you learn them in the first trimester, you're empowered to
continue. That it was a positive reinforcement for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in coping strategies that help you maybe hopefully even avoid some of the issues that crop up in later pregnancy or during birth. And at the very least give you nourishment and coping strategies for yourself that you can handle whatever else does come up in your pregnancy.
So how did you find the publisher? Like, kind of tell us if anybody's thinking as a midwife, they want to write a book, like kind of tell us what you went through as a process. Because I can't imagine, I mean, we have these great ideas and then you're trying to tell the publisher, this is what a midwife is. This is what we do. You have to explain your whole background, unless you find the right one that's had home births, of course.
Right. Well, I'm actually still in the soup of that. And actually, I've spent a lot of time researching the question of whether you self-publish or whether you go a publishing route and try to convince a publisher that they should
publish it and get it more to the masses. Yeah.
Right. And so where I'm at this point is that I'm going to start out by self-publishing because what I learned, I mean, I took several classes on publishing and talked with different publishers and agents and I didn't, you know, I, with the angle of asking, what should I do about mm-hmm. this? And what I learned was that no matter which route you take, you're going to do all of your own marketing. Mm-hmm. Like, unless you're already,
Oprah, well-named author and you have,
right? You know, like a well-known person who already has a TV show or something like that, like a very large audience, like an Oprah size audience, right? Okay. If you're already Oprah, you can go to a publisher and they'll publish your book.
Yeah, because it's a no-brainer to them.
Other than that, the publishers are just going to tell you, you have to build your audience to that size before it's worth our time to publish you.
Yeah.
And so it didn't really seem like there was a lot of benefit.
And we have such a unique market too. Like if as soon as it says midwife on it, half the population doesn't even know what a midwife is. So you already got like a narrowed down approach of who are you, but you have the advantage of Amazon and you can network with all the midwives across the country, send them a free book or just get some flyers out there. So we have such a knit group that you can access all the midwives who are going to promote it to their clients. I think they're going to be your biggest sales reps for you.
Yeah. And I certainly hope so. I would love to share it with everybody. And so I've decided that the best thing for me with the size of platform that I have right now is to start out self-publishing, and get it to, you know, and make links and networking, and that I'm going to be the best advocate for doing that myself. Yeah. And actually what we're doing is that my husband, who's a stay-at-home dad, who also does a wonderful variety of things, including
they were build anything.
He can learn anything. He can do all the tech stuff. He's doing some continuing education and in marketing, learning to do marketing. So we're going to do everything in-house. And I guess that's kind of the personality of the home birth midwife.
I can do it best. So I'm just going to do it myself. Yeah, you and I talked off air about the Achilles of midwives and with me starting the business consulting company, because we're very good self-employed people, but we're terrible at being business owners because we don't want to let go of tasks and responsibilities because we're like, I can do it the best. Even though I've never done this before, I know I could do the best.
Well, and it's not so much that, it's more that like, maybe I won't do it the best. I'm totally aware of that my own limitations here. Right. And it's actually quite terrifying. But at the end of the day, who's going to care about it more than right. I do, you know? And yeah, if the option is me pay someone else to care about it, right. I mean, no one's going to care about it more than my husband and I.
Yeah, and I agree. Yeah. There's certain projects.
At the end of the day, that passion helps drive it.
Oh, 1,000%. Yeah.
Especially
we just got to find you some publishers out there that have had home births with midwives where the passion is just as strong as yours.
Right. So if you know anybody,
yeah, I was going to say, you know, we're putting the bar very high of expectations that the publisher has to have this backdrop. Yeah. So,
well, and that's something though, that I do want to like, I am a home birth midwife, obviously, and I specialize in home birth, and obviously that's my comfort zone and I love it. And I want there to be more information about home birth out there. But one of the reasons I didn't write a book for a really long time was because there's already so many great books about home birth out there.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to just duplicate that, you know, because there's, I mean, you know, who could duplicate Ina May and Aviva Ron.
I know, but someday you'll be that person. I know they had to start somewhere, you know, 30 right. years from now, you're going to be the legendary midwife that the next generations talk about.
Well, I'd love to do my part in contributing, but I don't want to just duplicate what's out there. And so I really, my goal with these books is to make them not really focused on home birth. You know, like I'm not hiding that in the book at all. My biases are clear. But I really am trying to write it to the wider audience of people.
Oh, yeah, they all have the same symptoms. It doesn't matter where their birth location is for sure. Yeah.
Right. And especially with the first trimester, a lot of people don't even know where they're going to be giving birth yet, you know? And so part of that first trimester is making those decisions and figuring out what kind of care you want. And so this book very specifically is very much aimed at any mom, you know, any family that's dealing with.
Do you do in the recipe book a lot of like common educational topics and giving good informed consent, or just focus on the recipes for common symptoms?
Well, I've kind of got a mix. So The first part of the book is really focused on universal type chapters, like things that every new mom needs to know about, like how due dates are a myth, right? Yeah. And how to like create your own mindset in the beginning of pregnancy that you're not going to get attached to a date. Right. Yeah. And just general eating stuff about eating that's helpful for everybody. Right. And
so it's very exercise. Awesome.
Right. And then there's the section called the new life formulas that are more like people can just sort of like read the set. And I've got a new life formula for nausea, for anemia, for headaches, for constipation, for balancing your outputs and intakes, right? Those kinds of things. And then there's chapters that are actually a more expanded discussion about the really more complicated issues like nausea, that goes more in, like the chapter goes more in depth about what is nausea? What causes it?
Very cool.
How, you know, I've got kind of a 5 root causes of nausea that we talk through, and then people can like read through those and figure out which ones are most at play for them.
Amazing. Oh my goodness. I'm so excited to read your book. Yeah.
The miscarriage one is big, because I think that that's an area where lots of women, unfortunately, are having miscarriages. I think that's on the rise, unfortunately. And I think there's so little information out there and so little good information. And I think it's really common for women to start having some spotting or bleeding. And, you know, obviously the first question you're asking is, what's happening?
What's normal? And that, is this the implantation bleeding? Is this, if they even know what that is, or like, yeah, there's a lot of causes of bleeding, and these are the signs to look for, normal physiological versus this is sadder right. direction. Yeah.
And I think most books, and I understand this, I mean, nobody wants to get sued or lead people into DIYing a situation that's not safe.
Right.
You know, I think as practitioners, we have to be really responsible about that. But I think that because we're so worried about giving women any information, that a lot of sources really don't give enough helpful information. And so I think that for most women who are pretty well educated and have Google sitting right there, you actually need more information rather than where, like, what to do, what to expect when you're expected, where it just says, if this happens,
call your doctor. Yeah. Everything's an answer.
Right. And what happens when you call your doctor is you call, you talk to someone who's not a doctor, who sends you to the nurse's voicemail, who then might call you back later that day. It is not a direct thing. You cannot call your doctor and get medical information like that.
Mm-mm. There are hot and then you want to make an appointment and they don't have anything available for a week. And yeah,
no, I mean, and so if you need that, I mean, you can go to the emergency room, but that's, you know,
I can go on about ERs and urgent cares and obstetrics. Exactly. Like, that's not their specialty. They would rather have a cardiac issue come in than a pregnant woman.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I bless them. I'm so glad we're there.
Goodness. They like the critical stuff because that's their whole purpose. I always laugh at the words nice labor and delivery. When they'd be in a wheelchair, you'd be like, yep, she's pregnant and in labor, because they'd be going crazy fast, like even faster than the heart attacks down the hallway. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. Right. And then, I mean, you know, how nice would it be if you could just open up your first trimester book and it would say, I've actually got
a separate chapter
for spotting and miscarriage, because spotting could be one of several things, some of which are benign and some of which are get to emergency care right away.
Right.
Right. And you need a little bit of help figuring out where you're at. And I say all through the book, don't DIY this. Have a practitioner, talk to them, make sure you're getting care with someone.
Right.
But
you're kind of being that experienced girlfriend that's had lots of babies before that they'd call on the phone for questions. That's what it sounds like. You're just being that really good resource to get started before they make some phone calls. Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that it's used by lots and lots of people and that it fills in some of the gaps, you know, because really we have some big gaps in our healthcare system that people are falling through and having sad traumatic experiences because of it. And if I can do anything to help that, that's my goal. Yeah.
Well, and I think you hit the nail on the head when you were talking about the wise wisdom of, yes, I can be a midwife and I can catch a baby. I can exchange my time, but I'm only the ripple effect of sometimes choosing these additional resources, creating online courses, creating a team where you now are running a business with 3 to 5 midwives. You can impact when you start creatively thinking, what are these ways that now my knowledge of wisdom is not going to get out to the lady I'm sitting in a prenatal visit. It's going to get out to the whole world, theoretically. And so, I think it's so wise. I wish more midwives like, okay, what's a little side project, a little fun thing I can do to get my words of wisdom out greater?
Yeah, I sure hope. I mean, for anybody that's listening to this, thinking about writing a book, do it. I mean, there's so one thing that really kicked me over into starting to write this book was when I realized that there are only about 4,000 CPMs in the United States. And that's actually a staggeringly small number of us.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we can't reach everybody just by person to person contact. Mm-hmm. And if our, you know, if our wonderful goal happened that suddenly there was this big shift and people realized that midwifery care was the starting place for most women, we would be inundated. Like, we would not be able to handle it, you know?
Yeah. And if you can only catch so many women and you have a waiting list, what's another way to support them on a virtual level, like giving the empowerment and education with your words? Like, yeah, there's other ways we can support women. Cause we can only take so many people for sure.
Right. And so what can we do with self-care? It was really, you know, inspiring to me to start thinking about it in terms of focusing on self-care. I mean, everybody says that, it's a big buzzword, and all those things that we talked about, like eating well and getting exercise and sleep and all that stuff. Everybody says that. Every practitioner tells moms to do that. Mm-hmm. But there's not a lot of nitty gritty actual guidance on, okay, what does that really mean? And how do you get from point A where you're at right now to point B where this is actually adequate eating for pregnancy?
Right. Yeah. Right. Or even the challenges where the midwife is saying it and then they're running in with their Diet Coke and their caffeine and you know they're not getting sleep. They're not doing their own self-care. The hypocrisy we do as practitioners sometimes, because it's a difficult thing. If I would love to see more studies of like how many people are truly living that good life work balance and truly living in self-care, and them writing some books like How Did I Get There? And it's not overnight. It's a habit changing progress. We're in an American society. Like, I've got a lot of international connections and they go on holidays for months and they just are relaxed. And you're like, you Americans, you're just workaholics over there. So,
well, yeah, and I think also
from
people,
an early age,
people think that eating right is hard and is something that they can't do or is too expensive, or, you know, there's a lot of
myths and barriers we put on ourselves. Like, yeah, the simple thing of just smaller portions. Well, you just cut your budget in half. You don't have to change what you're eating, but if you all of a sudden don't eat this portion and you eat that, you've just saved half your nutritional budget. Like, hey, you want some pasta? That's a simple thing.
I'm all about trying to find those really simple solutions that are actually usually based in things that my clients already have in their house. I try to really skew the formulas towards things like that, that are very
realistic expectations,
accessible, and everybody can do them or engage with them at some level. So it's not.
Well, if you want to add a little fun thing, like to motivate people, this is what we've done in our house, because I don't like exercise. If time's too precious and functional, like if you're going to put me on a treadmill and stare at a wall, I'm like, I'd rather be gardening. I'd rather be fixing something. Like, this is too, I'm too functional. So now we've shifted that we have family yoga time. Like the kids on YouTube, there's some really cool where they like go on Pokemon adventures and all this Minecraft stuff. Cause I've got three high energy boys. And so it's fun watching them evolve, and especially the three-year-old. Oh my gosh, he's so cute watching him do yoga. But like, if you can make it a high combination where now you're not forcing, it's a fun activity, it's family focused. Now the children can get good habits. Like, these are the little tangible things that we need the tips, not just start exercising and hopefully your kids will watch you do it and join. Like, what are these actual tangible things you could do out there?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great one. I love that image of
your book. Yeah, you have trouble exercising. Get family yoga time. There's some YouTube channels you can hook them up.
I'm going to hit you up, because one of the things in the book is mama stories. And so I have those sort of sprinkled.
Please do. I would love it. Because it's the truth. Like, I was like, oh, I don't want to do yoga, or it's not going to be that hard. And after 10 minutes, 15 minutes of yoga, you're like, oh, and the kids are like, let's do another one. And I'm like, oh, okay. Mommy's gonna be in the back, so you can half see me doing it. Like,
I totally hear you on the exercise thing. Yeah,
but you have to be creative when we're moms and we have so many things. Like, I think that's the thing. As a business consultant, I always stress to people: how can we not give you less time, but how can we group some things together? Now we've got family bonding. We've got all your kids learning a good habit. You're getting your exercise. Like, how can we creatively, because time is very precious for everyone. So how can we creatively, like with your business, I'm like, okay, how can I creatively give you some time management tips that are also going to be embedded with something else you're already doing? Because if I just say do an extra hour of this, people are like, oh yeah. If we can add to our mamas some self-care that's realistic, that can be simple to implement, that's very specific and tangible, it makes it easier.
Yeah, I call those the win-win situations. And my clients always know when I say, oh, this one's a win-win solution.
I love your idea of the mama stories at the end. So you have real life mamas giving examples of what they've done to improve some of these things. That's awesome.
And I have them kind of like sprinkled all throughout the book, trying to
love it.
You know, because community is also something that, especially after these last 2 years, we're all a little missing our community. And so I'm really hoping that the book also fills that community connection to.
Oh, it'll be so cool. Yeah. So you got it recorded. You got total permission to use my story, use my name. Like, I don't mind it at all. So
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Well, I appreciate it. I was like, Lily, I could talk to you for so long. And I think it's been 30, 35 minutes. So I would love to have you on in like 3-4 months and we can kind of hear an update once you get closer to publishing and where we can find your book. That would be amazing to have you back on again.
Yeah, I'd love that. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
You're very, very welcome. You have a wonderful rest of your day, Lily.
Okay. Thank you so much, Leslie.